welcome to Season 7 of The Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. For this season, we're going back to our roots and talking to all sorts of creatives from a wide variety of industries, backgrounds, and creative endeavors about how they make it all work, from mental health to relationships to money to the creative process itself, and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Shannon Byrne, and I'm just trying to figure it out like the rest of us. Big thanks to the band Blessed for letting us use our song Endure as our intro music for this season. You can find their music at Blessed, that's B-L-E-S-S-E-D, band.bandcamp.com, or wherever you buy your music. And to Hannah Spencer for all of the design and branding and the strategy work she does for us. And Lonnie Webb for running our social media. Thank you for listening. Hope you all dig it. Hi. Hello. Welcome to episode 81 of The Process. This is a conversation with Cole Barish, who is a visual artist working primarily with the tools of photography, embroidery, and collage. Through that work, he explores and often focuses on the conversation of color and composition between two objects or moments. Well acquainted with international subcultures, Cole seeks subjects where the boundaries are more open and not as seasoned. Using an organic approach, his portraiture and still lives become known for their candid and spontaneous sense of intimacy. That's both for his personal work and also for his documentary work and commissioned work. He's been commissioned by organizations and publications such as The New York Times, The New Yorker, W Magazine, and a bunch more like leading publications. I will say Cole's work is definitely some of my favorite contemporary work. His photography is stunning, and I appreciate how he expresses his relationship to nature and the human form, which we dive into in this episode, as well as how he's incorporated writing into his practice and the impact that's had. He walks us through a project he's currently working on about skyscraper window washers, how he combines and balances commission and personal work and the value that he finds in both. Talk a lot about his goals and how his personal work influences the people who hire him for commissions and how it all just like works together, as well as how he vets commission projects before taking them and things like how he's figured out to assert and stand by his ideas while also being malleable and positive within a working environment. Yeah, we talk a whole lot more about his process, both types of work, about subcultures and the things that inspired him both in his youth and in adulthood, such as the imprint his mom's career as a landscape artist had on him, as well as being a child who spent a whole lot of time outside, and how he became a professional snowboard photographer by like age 18, and the challenges that that later presented when he moved to New York and was trying to get work, and how he overcame that, and of course how he defined success. You can find links to everything we talked about, including Cole's work as well as the work of the other artists we spoke about in this episode. Super chill conversation. It was very cool to be able to visit Cole's studio in Brooklyn, New York, and be able to have that conversation there where he does his work. I always enjoy those interviews and being able to get a vibe of what it's like to be in their space when they're going through their process, you know? Anyway, hope you dig it. Episode 81. Thanks for being here, and thank you to Cole, and I'll see y'all next week.
What'd you do today?
I walked around in the rain, and I guess maybe yesterday was a little more interesting because I just did boring meetings today. But I've been slowly working on this skyscraper window washing project. So I've been trying to get access in, kind of get in with this crew or any crew. And slowly over the course of like 8 months, I ended up getting in with this one. And I've slowly just been spending a couple days with them here and there, documenting them on these skyscrapers as they clean the windows. Yeah.
Is that a personal project or something you're doing for someone?
Cool. Yeah, I have a lot of personal work kind of consistently going, and that's been one of the ones that is in the mix.
Yeah. What inspired?
I've been starting to think a lot more about just windows. They definitely have had a pretty prominent place in art history, just like in general. But to me, I just have started to write and think about what they symbol to me personally. And then, you know, one thing led to the next with windows, and then being here in New York. And it's always hard to make photographs here because it's New York and it's been photographed like a million times in a million ways. So one day I think I was walking and I was just looking up and saw those guys, and I just started thinking, like, they must have such a weird, unique interaction with the city.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It might turn into, like, this larger kind of work that involves not just, like, the skyscraper window washing, but more about windows and the symbol of windows.
I feel like if I had that job, I would make up stories about every person that I see.
Yeah.
Funny. There's Deborah fighting with Bob again. So you said you've been writing about them. Is that a part of your practice
too? Yeah, only recently, like maybe in the past year, someone had suggested when I'm making work that I write. So I've been doing that. You know, I don't write every day, but when I'm kind of like in the thick of like a residency or making work consistently for like a couple weeks at a time, or I'm like at a place, you know, like in a specific area out in the world that I'm making work, I pretty consistently write. It's been such a nice experience to really just further the ideas in the work, and more so furthering the questions, I think, about the work, which just leads you further down the, like, the hole that you're going down, the never ending hole.
Are you like writing before and after kind of?
No, I, like, for instance, I've been going out to this one area in the West, in kind of on the border of Colorado and Utah. I've been out there like 4 or 5 times. And whenever I go out there, I try to make it a point to like only eat out if I'm eating out at just really basic restaurants or diners, and don't go to any like gentrified coffee shops. And just because I want to like really feel just as much as possible consistently in the world that I'm like entering. So when I'm like at these diners specifically, it's like become a small obsession. I usually write there, and it's usually kind of like entering into the trip and then during the trip, I guess, but not so much after.
Mm-hmm. Love a good diner.
Love a good diner. Yeah. It's just like so nice to not see, because we have it plenty here and wherever else we go, is see the cool gentrified like hip spots to eat and get coffee, which is like nice to spend time to, but it's also nice not to like enter into an environment and see everyone like on their cell phones or see everyone like look cool. It's kind of nice to see just what it was like before that, I guess.
Yeah, totally. You know? Where in Colorado?
The Western Slope. So it's kind of like this, I'm not sure exactly, but I want to say it's like this generally 100 to 200 mile square area of the border of Utah and Colorado.
I've spent some time there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You familiar with Peonia?
No.
Okay. It's in the Western Slope.
It is.
Yeah.
Cool.
In the, I think, North Fork Valley.
Okay.
I think,
yeah,
it's in the Western Slope.
Yeah.
It's kind of like west.
South.
In the middle.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, it's kind of like 1,500 people.
Yeah. That's so, yeah, cool. I love it. I think, too, being a East Coaster, I mean, I lived out in California for a while, but just in general, the landscape of the West is still, specifically the desert, is such a foreign thing to me, you, yeah, know? So that's been exciting to kind of just explore and react and experience.
Yeah. I feel like I didn't really know what nature was until I left the East Coast.
Yeah.
And went West. I was like, wow.
Yeah. Everything gets big and vast and, yeah.
I just realized I didn't do my normal, who are you?
My name is Cole Barish.
And how do you identify professionally?
I'm a visual artist based in Brooklyn, New York.
Cool. What are your mediums?
Photography and embroidery recently.
Cool. Yeah, what's, yeah, the embroidery? What are you doing?
I've been working on this work for, I guess, 3 years now, called The Sound of Dawn. It's basically sewing photographs in collages, as well as printing them on silk and sewing them, cool, or making sewing kind of linear creations on them.
Sweet. The episode that went out today, she's a painter and embroiders.
Oh, cool.
She does a lot of stuff. She's Black, and a lot of it's about her Black identity. So she's done some stuff with hair and embroidery, but she's also embroidered like words over her paintings of stuff she's like, some of them are thoughts, some of them are things she's heard in the wild, and you don't know which. And
wow. Yeah, it's pretty cool. What's her name?
Nima Gobier.
Nima Gobier. She's check that out.
Bay Area art. Cool. Bay Area. Yeah. She's great.
Oh, definitely.
Super young, super talented.
Cool.
Yeah.
How do you go about finding people? Or like, do you just kind of, like it just, you stumble upon them?
It's a mix. It's a mix of like, it started as friends, and then it became like people I'm fans of, or friends of friends, and some people I just stumble on. Cool. And then it became very residency based. Like I met her at a residency.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And that's why the San Francisco, I was at a residency.
Though. Okay, yeah, right. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You mentioned that you always have your side projects running, like probably a couple or a few at a time. How does that work with your...
like work practice?
Commissioned work, yeah. Like how do you combine it all?
Ah, fuck. It's such a fucking nightmare headache, but no, it's good.
I was gonna say, that's not the response I was expecting.
No, it's good. It's just, it's like such a hustle, you know. It's kind of like my work practice, the commission-based work, I started to treat it like if I get, say, like a 3 days or 4 days of commissioned work, I can then like dedicate 1 or 2 days strictly to like my art practice or in the studio. And I've been trying to kind of like go at it about kind of in that way. It is easy to kind of just get caught up in the hustle of commissioned work and chasing the new work and just getting more work and trying to, you know, keep the ball rolling. But I try to make it like a real point to, if I get some bread, then to stop and do a residency, like if it works out in time like that, or like take 3 weeks to go and focus on making work somewhere.
Okay.
But it is very up and down. Like sometimes it's like one has to take the back seat to the other for a while,
right?
You know, to make ends meet. For me, like I definitely have to have both to survive. One really obviously keeps the lights on and keeps food on the table, and then the other one is just like actually I think how I survive mentally and, you know, really keep it exciting and interesting. And at the end of the day, I think it's much more important.
Yeah,
you know, hopefully in the end, because you have an opportunity to actually like make statements about things out in the world, or observations, or types of places or things, versus the commission stuff, which is equally as fun to kind of make sometimes, but it's very like 3 seconds, it's gone out the door onto the next.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like if you look back and when you're 80 years old.
Yeah. You know. Totally. What's the goal? Like are you?
My goal is to stay afloat.
Yeah.
I think my goal is to just keep it rolling, to keep collaborating and making things with people like on a commission base that pays for the monthly expenses. But the real goal is to make some bodies of work that really say something, or, you know, that are really contributing to the conversation of the world in art, or just in the world in general, as art does.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my goal, I think, for the next 50 years.
Totally. Do you care if that's a combination of commission and like selling your own?
No.
Like fine art?
No. Or? Yeah. Like I think it's much easier to, I mean, the commission stuff, you can contribute to an idea from a commission by photographing as a commission for the publication, you know, which is nice too, because then there's writing with it sometimes, etc. But to really have it be not so much your own idea, but really just to you be making all the decisions from the language to the aesthetic to the image choice to the final presentation, whether it be an installment of an exhibition or a book, you know, that comes with it much more of not commissioned based, I guess.
Totally.
But I think it's possible to do both. Yeah, as doing both.
I tend to ask like money questions, not super specific, but is your personal stuff contributing to your living, or is it mostly?
I think it is. I mean, in like the grand scheme of things, I'm sure. Because I feel that I get hired based off of my personal work. Or I know that I do, you know. That's what I think a lot of the people, at least, that are hiring me, like photo editors or art buyers, they obviously want to make sure you can, like, show up and not fuck it up and deliver. But they also want to see what else you got going on and what else, you know, you have the self-drive to go and do, as well as your aesthetic choices and your ideas, you know, on your own time. And I think it's probably really interesting for them to kind of see people's different personal work, rather it just being all like just seeing the commissioned work.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah,
because people probably, I'd imagine, new ideas of ways of working with you too.
Yeah, totally. And that's when it is fun too. It's like some people will come and be like, do your thing, just open rain. And then sometimes it's a bit more collaborative, which is fun too, because it's like a set of challenges, right, which is fun to work through. Yeah. Especially if, I mean, sometimes it'll be a commission that you have no personal connection to, but it's a big challenge for whatever reason, whether it be the subject of the location or the restrictions, but it is fun kind of like having a problem solved, I guess.
Is there a filter that you like filter incoming clients in, like, this looks like it's going to be a nightmare versus?
Try to navigate away from certain areas before we get to them. Yeah. Does that make sense? Like, mostly it comes into like logistics and realistic restrictions or ideas, I guess. You know, just making sure everything is like realistic deadlines, and then making sure that, like, all right, if you want to get 15 different setups, then we're not going to be able to do that in one day with a crew of 50 people, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, game planning and logistics, I guess, is a big part of it. I never really thought about it, but it definitely is.
Yeah. More so than like what type of editorial it's for, or.
Yeah.
Is that stuff you consider too, or?
Yeah. Like the editorial stuff. Yeah. That stuff. So it's fun too. The editorial stuff's like really interesting. Some of it. Because you get to meet and work with like such interesting people sometimes. Sometimes you work with fucking assholes, and sometimes the images don't turn out great, or sometimes, I don't know, just it doesn't go good. But a lot of times you walk away just like having had a really nice experience or time, and sometimes it being a cool collaborative effort.
Yeah. Do you find that's important to have like good energy with the
subjects? Oh, yeah. It's all on you.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be, someone told me once that you have to remember, they're just like, know that everyone is replaceable, meaning that like no matter what you are doing as your job, like if you are going to be an asshole, or you're going to be hard to work with, or you're going to be negative, then there's a next person in line that will probably do it cheaper.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. It is definitely a fine line of, like, not being a pushover and making sure you get your ideas and decisions across and your time made to do that, balanced out with being super malleable and just positive.
Right. It's so much about, like, making the subject comfortable too, right?
Yeah, the environment, the subject, you know, like, I just ask a lot of questions. Like, someone also told me so long ago, they're like, people like to talk about themselves in general. Like, maybe not so much of, like, waving the flag, like, check out cool I am, but more so if you just ask interesting questions, then they're usually typically open to kind of talk about themselves or their life or where they live or their work versus just shut down 100%. Yeah. It is also interesting to have to make sure that you're not just making small talk.
Right.
You know, because that can be rude or dismissive kind of as well. So, yeah, I guess you got to be kind of quick on your feet with that.
Totally. Read there.
Yeah. Yeah.
What they seem to be about.
It is a lot about reading body language and just space and respect.
I want to get to your art. I feel like that's the most interesting.
Keep digging. Yeah, keep going and whatever.
I feel like I'd be remiss not to ask, like, how you get your commissions.
How do I get my commissions? Yeah. Fuck. Sorry, I'm swearing so much in this episode. I just hustle. Like, it is such a constant hustle. I honestly feel like 85% of my time is based on going out and getting the work and getting meetings and putting together the work to show. I'm talking commission-based stuff. And then it's like 15% of it is like the shooting or in the editing. You know, it's like very much, I guess, to answer your question, it's about showing the work in the right ways to the right people.
Is it through people that you know? Are you cold emailing people?
All the above. You know, I do feel that, especially in New York, it's like where everyone trusts the word of mouth a little bit. I mean, I should say that with a grain of salt of like people love and trust their friends' kind of suggestions often. So like, that's what I mean, I guess, by word of mouth. So I do think like meeting people in person and, you know, really being active, not in terms of like going out and partying, but like going out and just not going out to a random bar, but just like going to kind of like sometimes some of the right kind of gatherings or events and interacting with people that you would like to work with or that you have friends that work with, that is a good way. And then from there, you can kind of like start an email conversation. There's definitely the cold technique, which is super sick when you just get so denied or not responded to like 100 times in a row. But at the end of the day, if the work is good, you're going to get hired. So if you put it in front of someone, they're going to see it most likely. Whether they choose to like really look at it, I don't know. Or if they choose to respond, I don't know. But in this day and age of like, I mean, it's crazy with email, you can figure out pretty much everyone's email address pretty easily. Yeah. And then also through like DM, it's crazy that you can pretty much contact anyone, whether they read it or not is another thing. But it's like, there is a possibility of that. Yeah, I think more than ever is important to be like meeting people and having meetings with people like face to face versus over electronics or texting or emails, because everyone has to do so much of that. I think it's even more valuable these days, like the intimate firsthand conversations.
Totally.
You know,
I feel like people are coming back around to like, I feel like there's a time where everyone was too busy to do that.
Yeah.
I feel like people are starting to be like, okay, yes, I'll get coffee with this random person.
Yeah.
A bit more than.
Yeah, totally.
Because networking events suck.
Oh, garbage. Yeah, I'm like the worst of them.
Yeah, I'm not great. I went to a music-related one recently and then ended up talking to a woman about travel the entire time. Neither of us talked about music at all.
That's cool.
Neither of us really are good at this, so yeah. We'll just sit in a corner and talk about
People like thrive on it, and some people are so good at it, and I've just never been good at it.
I feel like it's more important to show up to the things that matter. So art itself, I feel like big fan, obviously. Although your aesthetic is very consistent, I feel like you like dabble in many different styles, from like people to nature to like more ephemeral, like super emotive work.
I think that's definitely valid. Basically, it's so funny that like we're talking about this, because I was always kind of, you know, you're taught for so long that, for years I was taught, you gotta choose one area, you gotta be known for your one thing, blah blah blah. And then I read Gerhard Richter, the painter, German painter, his book of notes and interviews from like 1962 to 68, or maybe it was 84 or something. Anyways, a good chunk of the first quarter of the book is, it like fucked my head up. It was pretty much like backwards of everything I had ever been taught. For people that don't know about him, I mean, he's arguably like the most successful painter in contemporary art, I'd say, like at least one of them. You know, I don't think he's barely ever done commissioned based work, and I mean, his pieces sell at Sotheby's for like millions and whatever besides that. But his point is, like, being very German, he was just, at least the points I took away of interpreting it were, don't have a style. Don't try and say anything in your work. He basically was saying, like, just output, just make, just make, just make. And I was just like, holy shit, that is so crazy to take such 180 degrees different approach to making work versus like what you're kind of taught. He was also very all over the place with all the work he made. You know, he did photography, he did, obviously has done paintings, he's done so many different types of work that he was, in one part of the book, he was just kind of stating in an interview, I think, that he's like, yeah, every 4 years I switch to making something different, like different kind of works. And I was just like, wow. I mean, that's amazing to just have the confidence in just being free to kind of create. So that definitely like really got me going and has led me down this road of kind of combining these like nature and abstract works and still making the documentary work as well on the side or just in another area, but being okay with like going into this new area and just being able to like roam free and experiment and not, I don't want to say not care, but like you just, it was so free feeling. And I think with the documentary work, if you're contributing to making documentary work like in a contemporary way, I think you have to be very present in the ideas and you have to be kind of like politically correct and you have to be, you know, you need to be careful in what you're saying because you can easily be exploitive and exploit people or things. You can be intrusive and, you know, like you just, there's some boundaries there. And with the abstract stuff, and the nature-based stuff, it's free. You know, I just really felt like going into those works with this embroidery and then kind of going into like this, these Sound of Dawn works where the Sound of Dawn is basically this conversation of imagery between human form and land form where I was photographing these naked bodies together in the studio, like but very tightly focused compositions, like almost macro-based compositions of how bodies were laying together and then photographing these rock forms in this quarry in Portugal, then bringing the images together and seeing how they're having a language of symmetry in a linear fashion, I guess. And then the bringing the sewing and the embroidery element into it where I was just, it was like making, you know, your own drawing into it or your painting or your own lines. And that for the first time was also just so new to me, where as traditional photography, it's fairly limiting with like, it's a print on a wall in a frame, very two-dimensional, which can be very powerful, especially like, I mean, an image is, it can be so powerful. But with having the chance to like make it more three-dimensional and having it more layer-based, it was something really fun to explore. So hopefully that wasn't too big of a rant.
Yeah, super interesting. It almost sounds like when you're working on a project like that, kind of like a kid with a pencil.
And yeah,
like
totally.
Endless.
Oh, God. And you like, for sure, like full amateur hour.
But that's not what I meant.
No, yeah. But I mean, yeah, yeah. But like, you just,
you have no one, like, you can literally do wherever.
Yeah, you can just go and just like, you're in this space. For me, I was in this space where it just like, it was just me having fun and playing and just still like actively making decisions aesthetically as I was making them. But I didn't have to have that weight on my shoulders in terms of what am I saying. It's still important, of course, to be aware of what you're saying, even in that work. But it just doesn't feel quite as fragile as like the documentary work, especially like right now with just the world, right. You know, right. And America, right. And just fucking Trump and everything else, you know.
Yeah. With that project specifically, did you have like a vision of what they would look like? Or no. Did you like just go with the flow?
Full rabbit hole. Cool. Like full fucking rabbit hole. Yeah. It basically like was working up in Canada in Vancouver Island at this residency. And, you know, I went up there with these large prints of the bodies and the quarry. And I brought a few silks that I had made prints on, basically collages on the silks, basically had them printed. And I was trying to figure out, you know, with the sewing machine and the lines I was trying to think of like maybe some of them should have a bit of reference in the kind of linear way I'm drawing on them. And I don't know, I was just up there kind of just making it, making work. And it didn't dawn on me until the like last 4 days that I was there. But outside was a river that was constantly flowing in my ear because the window was open. And then I was like, holy shit, the Rio Tinto. And the Rio Tinto is this river that all the quarries in Spain, that I was also going to these quarries in Spain, empty out into this river called the Rio Tinto and create all these crazy mineral colors. And I had gone and photographed this river as well as kind of part of the project. And I was like, what if the lines reference some of the topographical lines of the river? Mm-hmm. So I took topographical portions of the river basically on Google Maps and got a projector from Walmart and projected it onto the 4x5 foot pieces of collage silk and then drew them in and then sewed over it. No one will ever like know or probably think that or I don't know, whatever. Right. But that is like an example, I guess, of the rabbit hole that I went down.
Did you exhibit that?
I just did, actually, yeah, just a couple pieces in a show up in Massachusetts.
Okay. Do you ever do something like that and just, like...
sit on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've been doing with that work for 3 years.
Wow.
Because I was just like... Well, one, it's just terrifying putting work out into the world via the internet because it's immediately associated with a number. Like, right. Amount of likes, which can fucking destroy you inside. I mean, obviously you want to say, like, none of that shit matters, and which it shouldn't, but, like, it'd be really hard if that didn't somehow affect you in some layer. But it's also hard to go in an entirely different direction than what people are used to seeing. It can be so jarring to your audience or people that, like, look at your work to see something so different. I mean, it can be nicely received, but it can also be just like people dismiss it really quickly. And that's hard. And I mean, it really shouldn't matter at the end of the day because it really just matters what's inside of you and what feels good and to be making. And if you consistently stick to that, I think you will create good work. But I was hesitant and very slowly put it out there until the kind of right thing came up. And it was this new gallery up on Cape Cod approached me and they wanted to do a show. And I said, you know, I basically have these kind of two bodies of work. One is an ongoing work and I'd be into showing introducing two to three of the pieces. And so that's where I framed a couple of them up and put them in the show. And it was like, wow, they're like out in the world. Yeah.
No comparison, but I started like pretty much only posting my film photos on my Instagram. Like, I don't, people want me to see what's happening in my life. It's for me. But I love sharing the photos.
Yeah.
And, like, no one likes my shit anymore. And I'm like, and I know I have a handful of friends who really like them, but, like,
yeah.
People have told me that they're good, like, that they enjoy them. But it sucks.
Sucks.
And that's, like, just a hobby. Like, I shouldn't
care. I mean, it's just, like, the whole idea of, like, what was cool about Tumblr was it didn't show likes.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like reblogged or blogged. I mean, you could, if you were like really dug for it, you could see the notes, but I don't know. It just sucks. I mean, more largely talking about a different issue and a bigger issue is like what it does to confidence in general, just for people, whether it's making art or just like themselves in general on there, it can just do terrible things to people, I think. You know,
yeah.
Young people especially. I mean, I can't imagine being fucking 9 years old, 10 years old.
No. My friends and I talk about that all the time. We're like, thank God Instagram was not a thing when we were in middle school.
How do you navigate that and still come out like a good human?
Yeah. I don't know. I think we're going to find out.
Yeah, true.
How possible that is. Is social media like... important to business development, you know?
It sucks. It's inevitable. Like, I have to embrace it 100%.
Do you put, like, a lot of... I feel like you have a very beautiful Instagram. Does a lot of thought go into that?
It is 100%. I just feel like unless you are, like, a crazy, crazy huge name and you consistently want to... Yeah, I mean, it's inevitable that you have to interact with that thing. Because you have to feed the beast, because it's now a real platform for you, not just to show work, but also to like communicate news and feelings and whatever it is. I fucking put stupid amounts of like thought into it. Like the stories thing is fun because you can just fuck off a little bit, but like, and the posts you kind of get into, and I think people get sick of seeing if it's just too serious, but I will say I have to sit down and like be in a quiet kind of space for 10 minutes and decide, like, especially if I'm like putting a series of photos out on it. Yeah, I have to put thought into it. It's so annoying.
And plan it out.
I have to like fucking carve time out in my day to do it. It sucks. It just is like.
But you feel that it's important.
I for sure I do.
Have you gotten, obviously people are looking at your social media after finding you, but right, to like, all right, let me dig deeper. That's what people do.
So yeah.
Go into a website.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, I think these days too, again, not even just talking about photography or art, but I just think in general, if someone tells you about a person, you don't Google them anymore. You look them up on Instagram.
That's true.
You know, and it's like, disgusting, but it has to like represent you in a way that you want to be seen and shown, and so you show the work that you want to represent you, I guess.
Yeah, I have to say it's like very attractive when someone's not on social media.
God,
like, good for you.
Good for you.
Drawing that line.
A lot of my friends are not up in Massachusetts.
Do they have like
no, they're like
traditional jobs.
Yeah, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah. Would you ever trade?
For a little while.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I for sure. I mean, there's like people. I'm not. Have you ever heard of Mike Brody?
Sounds familiar.
So he is this basically this guy that came out with this work about 5 years ago, maybe, that was all about hopping trains. He was part of this. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. It was like crazy internet sensation. He didn't want to have anything to do with any part of any kind of attention. I don't even think he has a website or anything. Like, the book did crazy big gallery shows. He's like a diesel mechanic in Oakland.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, I think he's making some pictures somewhere on something, but he's like very much removed. Yeah, and I think it's possible to do that, but just a different approach to making a living, basically. So, you know,
what do you know what you would do?
I think I'd probably be working like as a carpenter or like something, working outside, like with tools or in the land or something. Yeah,
building stuff.
Yeah, making stuff. Yeah, my mom's a landscape designer. Which I just realized, like, earlier this year has had a huge impression on me.
Really?
Yeah, I had this fucking, like, mind opening to me a little bit. But I had this commission for the New Yorker to go and interpret the exhibition of Max Brunwell. I'm going to butcher the name. Damn it. At the New York Botanical Gardens in the Bronx. And, or is it Harlem? No, it's Bronx. And, you know, he's a huge, I mean, he's passed now, but a huge landscape artist, landscape architect. And this installation was the biggest one they've ever had, right? So it was like making these basically like landscape images of this installation. But it wasn't like landscape per se, like horizontal with the horizon. It was more like interpreting the landscape, which I had to put a ton of thought into beforehand. But what I realized was, for years, going and seeing upstairs in my mom's like tiny, crammed little papers everywhere office on her drafting table, she always had plans of these gardens she was designing. It was very much all about shapes and space and basically making these compositions that were aesthetically pleasing with about the color and the shapes of the plants and the gardens she was making. And I just realized so much of photographs and making compositions are about that. You know, you're making decisions of putting shapes and lines in a frame, you know?
Yeah.
So that was, kind of interesting to kind of see. And now I've also like realized in the past year that being brought up in like very rural environment, you know, both my parents were very heavily like in the outdoors. Like they both worked at Knowles. Do you know what that is? Like National Outdoor Leadership School in Colorado. Very, very heavy, heavy outdoor enthusiasts. And they always had us outside. And I was just brought up in so much nature. And it's been interesting how the last two or three bodies of work is just so heavily involves nature. And I realized that I think for the rest of my path or life, my practice will always have to kind of do with my relationship of and with nature.
Totally. Do you remember if you used to ask your mom questions about her process at all? Or would you share any of that? Or was it just observing from a distance?
I've never, you know, I mean, like, yeah, I was just observing from a distance, I guess, you know. I mean, and she always had like crazy beautiful gardens growing up in our, where we lived in Vermont. I mean, they were so cool.
Sounds like a pretty magical, inspirational way to grow.
She was always like, oh my God, they're so overgrown. And I never get to put time in them because, you know, she's like having to go and make all these other designs. And she was actively landscaping as well. But yeah, I think probably just kind of observing, taking it in kind of like subconsciously. You know, yeah.
So you grew up in rural Vermont.
Yeah. And then kind of Cape Cod a bit, you know, which is an area out there, like at the end of the Cape, Outer Cape, Wellfleet, which is like 70% of the town is National Seashore or National Park. So it's, yeah, very heavily kind of nature, small fishing town, very rural, but also in the summer, it's like nuts.
Yeah.
You know,
I told myself I would make it out there. Summer night,
gotta come next one, or yeah, at some point. The fall is really nice.
I'll say, like, sometime off season when it's not September. Like filled with tourists.
late September is so nice.
I think I read somewhere that you first picked up a camera when you were like 13 or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
My dad's hand me down. I actually think it might have been his father's too. No, I can't be right. But my grandfather was a hobbyist photographer, had a dark room. My dad was a hobbyist photographer as well. He gave me this Canon AE-1, like old Canon from the 70s, I think. And yeah, I got super interested into it and started photographing everything around me. And then eventually started shooting snowboarding. And then that kind of led me into photographing snowboarding for like 8 years, I think. Six or seven, 8 years. Kind of like full time. And that's like what I did was that from like age 15 to 22 or something.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
You're like, you're making money as a photographer.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. It was like, I moved out west with like four or five other kids from the East Coast that wanted to be pro snowboarders, and I wanted to be a snowboard photographer. And we found this homeschool program, and we found this spot to kind of live, and we like worked this thing out where our parents let us go out there at 16 and 17 and just go. You know, and my dad, I remember he like sat me down and he said, you know, you fuck up once, you're coming home and you drop your grades below whatever it was, you're coming back. So he kind of put the ball in my court pretty early. But it was cool because it was like this energy where those guys, kids, everyone worked together to kind of like get good pictures and video shots to bring to the magazines at the time. And to companies. And then by 18, we had all graduated. And then they got contracts as professional writers. And I got a contract being a staff photographer for one of the magazines and the brands. So that like led to them being on retainer for like Nike snowboarding for a couple of years. And yeah, it was like a lot of time in the cold and learning to like spend a lot of time, a lot of kind of like extreme scenarios, I guess, and making pictures out of not much sometimes. But then I kind of hit the roof a little bit creatively and then needed to switch it up, so I moved to New York at like 23 or 24 or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've been in the general area since?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's funny. I always said I was like, nah, never going to New York. It's too far from the beach. Like, people are crazy there. And then someone gave me a free chance to like stay for a couple months here. And I was like, holy shit. This place is incredible how much it pushes you. And my friends at the time, like that I had made here, their work they were making was so good that I was like, it elevated my game. You know, I was like, well, I have to step it up, you know?
York does do that.
It really does.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like this competitiveness kind of, but it's also just like everyone's shit here, at least I had felt, was, it's good. Like the best of the best come through here for a reason, I think. And it's really cutthroat and it's a hard place to survive. But I think if you can kind of manage to make it work here, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like people here also, it's competitive, but people are supportive.
Yeah.
I always say people in New York show up.
Yeah.
Whereas compared to other places, people don't.
Yeah, I know, for sure.
Show up.
Yeah, in, like, people show up. Yeah. That's a great way of saying it. People in New York show up 100%.
So the sense of community is what keeps me.
Yeah. Like even in this studio here, you know, I share it with 5 other people. And then there's a studio like 2 floors above us with like a bunch of other people. And we have these, like, we haven't had one in a minute, but these crit nights where 2 people are allowed to bring body of work they're working on. And then we have critique on it. Yeah. And it's like such a good, strong community feeling. Of actively, like, people really giving criticism to your work, you know, versus like, what's the other option these days? Throw it on the internet and see how it does.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sucks.
And people like being thoughtful about it.
Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Exactly.
Not just, like, I hate that.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And you're hearing like really good ideas about it. They might be harsh, but they're like constructive, you know? Right. So yeah, like the sense of community, I think here in New York is huge.
Yeah.
For sure.
Did you never get, like, formal training?
No.
Wow.
I tried. I kind of fucked up. I tried to go to a school based on location and not the school. Real dumb.
I mean, I did that, too.
I was so stupid. I just wanted to go and surf, basically. So I chose a photography school in Santa Barbara, Brooks Institute. And it was such a pile. Just, ugh. Full of the most privileged kids, and they didn't even care about, I shouldn't say that, but like, it was basically, the school was there to just take advantage of people. Like, the tuition was crazy high, the faculty was all over the place, and I just went to them 3 weeks into it, and I was really excited to be, you know, in an environment where I was going to be learning. And, you know, I said, you know, this first class, like the intro class, I'm just wondering if it'd be possible if I started like it's the second semester in, because, you know, I've already been working as a photographer for a couple of years. I definitely have so much to learn, but I'm just wondering if I can maybe start in the class that isn't just going over like how to use a camera.
Yeah.
He's like, absolutely. The dean was like, absolutely not. You need to go through all the standard shit. And I was like, nah, you're like just trying to take advantage of me and like take my cash.
Yeah.
And so I picked up and left day 22 or something.
Fair.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes I think it would have been interesting to go a different route with that one.
But
yeah, then it would have been a totally different road.
Yeah, who knows where you would have been. Maybe you would have, like, developed a hatred for it.
True.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're like, when you're forced to do something in a certain way, but it's not, like, your way, which I feel like school does that sometimes.
That's true.
I've never been to art school, but I have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. So when you moved to New York, what type of work were you getting?
Oh, nothing. I was labeled as the snow photographer guy for like, it felt like years. But basically, yeah, I mean, all I had to show was, if not pictures of snowboarding, it was like pictures of the demographic of snowboarders.
Right.
Like age 16 to 24, like skateboarders, basically, you know, that snowboard, which was awesome. But people can't see that you could photograph other things. I had to actively go out and make a whole new lots of work to show.
I feel like it seems like you, and I think I actually read this somewhere too in one of your interviews, but you definitely have a thing for subcultures.
Yeah, I like going into just basically learning. I think subcultures make up such an interesting part of the world as a whole. You know, kind of like this layer of the world that is just on the kind of ground level a little bit. And I think there's a lot to be learned through understanding them. And so going and experiencing and learning about one like face to face has always been something I've enjoyed, and kind of figuring it out visually, I guess, attempting to understand it by visualizing it, I guess.
Part of it's like trying to understand the draw to it for the people who are within the subculture too, or
yeah, and just understand like what makes the subculture this subculture? Is it like clothing? Is it the environments? Is it the weird objects? Is it the choices of color? Is it the choice of accessories? Is it the energy? Is it tools that they use? Or is it like skate? Like, is it skateboards? Is it like, I don't know, like, is it the music usually has a large part of it for sure. It's always driven, always the best stuff, you know. Yeah. I guess that is part of it.
Other than music, are there any other like themes that you've found, or is it all just really vary depending on the,
I mean, with like skateboarding, surfing, and snowboarding, it's definitely like music inspired. Yeah. Like the like roots of it is very much like from music, I feel like, and kind of like this idea of freedom and this idea of like against the man, and kind of, and that really strong sense of community. And then the other subcultures, I don't know.
One quick self-serving question. That's most definitely a dumb question. But when you are taking like your experimental photos, like I love a good like distorted kind of fucked up photo. It's, that's what speaks to me. That's what I like taking. That's what I like trying to develop and failing hard. When you're doing that, do you like know what you're doing when you're getting experimental? Are you like
experimental in terms of like making experimental work?
No, I guess more so like your ephemeral stuff, your like work that's not super crisp or like
that, yeah, has that more, yeah, like more
like textured,
yeah, layered. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that it almost just goes back to just the approach I try to take in general with making work, no matter what the work is like you're just listening to your inside. If something draws you in, if you find interest in something, I listen to that and I just go. And I worry about it later if it works or not. Maybe that's the answer to your question.
Yeah.
I definitely don't know if it works when I'm trying it, but I'm just actively like listening to ideas or questions and going through the process of making them. And then at the end, figuring out if it worked or not.
Cool. Two questions I've been asking everyone this season.
Sure.
One is, what does success mean or look like for you?
I think happiness. Yeah. Just being happy and just being fulfilled inside, especially with like the work you're making. Success in a money way, I would say, is like, are you happy to me? It's like, do you make ends meet enough to just wake up and be happy or enjoy like parts of your life? If you can answer that question like even remotely, then I think you're doing good. And then in terms of like happiness or success, like for the work that I'm making, I think if I feel fulfilled inside with like the final outcome, if I feel good when it's out in the world as the final object, whatever it may be, like in a book form or on the wall or just existing object, if it feels good inside, then I feel successful.
Are you, do you find that although you're like hustling, you're happy?
Yeah.
That,
I mean,
that doesn't take away from that.
Oh fuck, it's like such ups and downs. Like I have like definitely weeks I'm just like, what am I doing? Like, but then it's like, yeah, I also try to still have fun doing other things, which is important, you know.
Yeah. I've retired this question, but I'm curious, what does the word process mean to you?
The word process to me means going through a systematic function inside, I think. Cool. Yeah, working out your thoughts and ideas in a tangible way, you know, which might not be everyone's way. Like if you're an app developer, it's probably all done on the computer, right? But like for me, that's what like process means. What about you? Oof, cornered.
Yeah. I want to steal like everyone else's answers. Everyone's usually like, I'm getting from point A to point B, which isn't really an answer. Time and space.
Yeah, that's a good one too. I like that.
Yeah, I feel like I do my best processing when I like give myself those two things.
Time and space. Yeah. dedicated time and space. It is interesting how much, like, at least for me, an environment will contribute to just being in the right headspace. Like, it's such like a vibe. Being in a studio, like in a empty space that is like clean, and I can just like think and be making things and experimenting, versus like being in a tiny crammed bedroom with shit all over the floor and all over fucking everywhere, and cookies and burgers and beers all over the place. Like, I can't work in that environment. You know, which some people can, which is cool, you know. But it is interesting how much an environment affects that for me.
My therapist has helped me identify that as like a straight up obsession with like space and vastness, and like I love the ocean and the desert both so much, and what time here, I think.
Yeah,
even on a run, if there's like someone in front of me, or if I'm walking or whatever, there's someone, I have to get around them. Yeah, I like can't have people in front of me. It's a whole, yeah.
Have you spent time in the desert?
A little bit. Like, not so huge fucking chunks. Cool.
Yeah. I haven't needed to really, but I just like, yeah, keep just going back to it, because I was like never brought up anywhere close to it, or we never did any trips in it. And so it's like just bizarre, you know, how it just goes from like this mutant place during the day, like hot, and there's just nothing there, and it's just like intolerable and just so intense, and there's nothing alive really. I mean, there is, but, and then it's like goes 180 degrees at night, where it's like cold and the colors is fucking so cool.
A few tarot card readers have told me that they see me in the desert.
Really?
Yeah. For someone who literally grew up with the water. Interesting.
Where did you grow up?
In Florida.
Oh yeah, right. I was just out in Nevada in Black Rock Desert, not at fucking Burning Man.
Yeah.
But I went after to like go check out this thing that was going on. It wasn't like a festival, but yeah, we ended up camping out there, and it was so cool. Yeah, if you're ever out there. Yeah. I don't know, or have you been there?
I haven't. I think there's a rural residency out there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty sure.
Damn, that's cool.
Well, last question. What are you excited about today? What's something you're excited about today?
Dinner.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think trying to, go find some cheap sushi somewhere.
Sweet.
All right.